Hi, welcome to another Writers After Dark. We are here because good stories start with the writers, since wherever there's a story, someone's either making it up or writing it down. And my guest today is acclaimed horror author and now editor, Kevin Lucia, who has a new novella anthology for us called
October Nights.
October Nights, coming out, is it October 19th or...
October 22nd will be the release date.
From one of my favorite indie publishers, Crystal Lake Publishing. And this book follows, I'm going to say, a very curious theme that I've noticed in collections, because this is the third collection of short stories or novellas just in 2021. That focuses a series of stories or a selection of stories threaded together, all set in a same town that has problems. So welcome, Kevin.
Well, thank you for having me.
So talk about October Nights and why this particular town, Clifton Heights in New York, is having such a unique and special October.
Well, October Nights, as I said, is my latest book. It's coming out October 22nd. It's a collection of Halloween novellas. Most of my fiction takes place in kind of my own mythical little haunted town, you know, a lot like Charles Grant's Ox Run Station or Gary Brombeck's Cedar Hill. And I figure it's a strange little town. I wouldn't call it an evil town, but it's got some dark corners where marginalized people tend to kind of disappear. And I thought, I've always wanted to write an October book or a Halloween book. It's never quite landed right, or never really had, you know, whatever. I was in progress and working on something, publication dates didn't work out, but last spring I was working on it, and then I shot an email to Joe, and I said, you got an October release? And he said, I do, because I figured that if any town would have a strange Halloween, it would certainly be Clifton Heights, because that's a town where strangeness is kind of a 24/7 thing. So I've always wanted to do, you know, a Halloween book, and now it's coming out.
So without going into any spoilers, what trials and tribulations did you come up with for this town for this year? Because we know this is going to happen again.
It is, sadly. So Clifton Heights is the kind of town where if you've lived there all your life, it's not so unfriendly. You know, if you're, you know, it tends to prey on the people who either come to that town looking to escape something, or people who have kind of fallen on hard times and are somewhat marginalized. So you have a group of people. One of them is a longtime Clifton Heights resident who simply encounters something on Halloween night that sort of changes his perception of the world. Another story is about a man who's running away from his pain and his guilt. And unfortunately, Clifton Heights is not the place to come with your pain and guilt on All Hallows Eve. The other two stories, however, are a little bit different. They do involve longtime Clifton Heights residents, but they end up finding a little bit of closure and a little bit of resolution and redemption. So there's a little bit of everything. You know, it's like I said, it's not I wouldn't call it an evil town. It's just a town where the corners don't quite square, you know, and that the walls are thin sometimes and things sneak their way through from the other world. And sometimes it's to someone's benefit, sometimes it's not.
So what appeals to you about writing for characters that have, like, you know, a good moment or a bad moment for a collection like this?
I think, you know, horror over the years has become something that's become a very personal for me as a writer. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have a lot of fun, you know, with the with the horror elements and the monsters and the supernatural and the crazy things. That's just a lot of fun. And when you're typing that out and you're thinking, I'm making this up and someone's going to read this, this is great. But I know when I first started out writing horror, a lot of my stories, they were okay. They're the stories that are in my first collection, Things Slipped Through, also from Crystal Lake. And it's a good, solid collection. But a lot of those stories were me sitting down and going, ooh, I'm going to write a Wendigo story. I'm going to write a Lady in White story. I was writing, I'm going to write a Cthulhu story. So I was very intentionally trying to write horror stories. But over time, my gaze really started turning inward. And the horror elements almost come later. What I really want to do is I want to focus into characters that are grappling with some kind of burden. You know, they're weighed down by something. A lot of these people are lost and lonely and wandering. And some of them wander, again, out of the woods into the clearing. Some of them never get out of the woods. Some of them end up meeting an awful fate. But the core is usually, you know, these characters are not, obviously they're not just duplicates of me, but usually I'm trying to zoom in on something about being a human, something about the human experience that troubles me or that I grapple with myself. Or like, you know, the best quote that I ever came across was in Gary Bronbeck. If anyone out there has not read Gary Bronbeck, you really need to fix that right now. He wrote a nonfiction book called To Each Their Darkness, talking about writing, but also about why he wrote horror. And in one of the passages, he said that he writes horror to ask all the questions that there are no answers to. You know, why do bad things happen? Why do people kill themselves? Why do people get murdered? Why do people murder others? You know, why do kids die? You know, maybe there's no answers for those questions, but that's why he writes horror, because he has these questions that he has to ask them. And I think that's probably the baseline for the story. Like, I don't ever really know how supernatural the story is going to get. You know, sometimes there's only the lightest Twilight Zone twist. I don't know. I just kind of, I'm also a big fan of what Stephen King says, the story is the boss, you know, so where it goes, how horror it gets, I'm not ever sure. But what I always start with is I focus on that question or that, you know, what is this really about? You know, what is it, you know, what's this all mean, you know, at the end of the day?
So you are finding it more satisfying to dive into the people and their inner demons rather than the monster in the woods, the actual monster, because that person might be harboring a deeper monster inside them.
Absolutely. And I have no problem with their writing about a monster in the woods, but even if I do write a monster in the woods, that monster in the woods is probably going to be used to set off something internal in people. And I think when we discovered the work of Charles Grant, T.M. Wright, and Ramsey Campbell, you know, that really kind of turned a key for me there. And Stephen King, of course, he's the godfather of horror at this point. Stephen King's characters have always been so, so tangible. I know some people complain about his plots being unwieldy or too long. I'm one of those folks that just never care. Because they're like, people are like, why did he give 5 pages on a postman that we'll never see ever again? And I'm like, I'm digging this postman guy. I don't care if I don't see this guy. This is great stuff. So, you know, that's part of my literary. But you're right. Yeah, that's really what gets, you know, and whether the story becomes super, super natural or not, I don't really know where that's going to go. But the attraction is writing about that person and what are they grappling with.
So you're saying you're a pantser.
Yes and no. When it comes to short stories and novellas, I've had a lot of success with pantsing. I don't ever usually have to outline those. I just kind of sit down and feel my way around. I think it is telling that out of all the books that I've written, there are no novels there yet. And the reason why that is I've pantsed several novels and I get to about 800 pages and it all collapses under its own weight. So I have had to move to, so short stories and novellas, I don't bother outlining. I feel that around. But I have had to move to outlining novels, just because once I get four or five characters in play, and it doesn't mean I have to stay with that outline, but the outline becomes a just kind of like a little nudge, you know. And the first novel that I finally outlined, you know, I was able to complete. It's a big giant 90K weird Western with Billy the Kid and flesh-eating monsters, and I had to outline that one, and it worked out pretty well. So
you had my attention when you said Western, sir.
That was a funny story how that came about. Probably about 10 or 11 years ago, I had the opportunity to pitch something to Harper Teen, and they were just kind of riding the wave of, was it Romeo and Juliet and vampires, Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters,
yeah,
Little Women vampires. So they wanted a twist on a historical, and I offered them a couple different things, and I finally offered them Billy the Kid and zombies, and the acquisition editor was like, "That sounds awesome." And it was also right at the time that Cowboys and Aliens was in the theater.
Uh-huh.
So, "This is great. This is awesome." She's like, "Let me go check with my, you know, the heads up before you start writing." And she come back a couple days later and she's like, "My boss doesn't think the marketing team will get it." So then I just went ahead and wrote it. I went ahead and wrote it anyway. You know, the idea was so strong in my head. You know, I started doing a ton of research on Billy the Kid and the Regulators, and found that I was able to find an actual moment in their history where this story would plug in, because there was, I mean, there's so much myth around Billy the Kid as it is, but I was able to find a nice spot in there, and it's gone through multiple rewrites, mostly because I started out writing a Western, not knowing how to write a Western. So, but now it's polished and kind of ready to find an agent, hopefully.
Cool. Well, I'm a fan of some of the weird Westerns, especially when they involve creatures. So I would like to see that when you're done. So
hopefully it will see. It's taken a chunk of 10 years of my life, so hopefully it will see the light of day eventually.
Cool. Cool. So with your shorter writings, the short stories, the novellas, what is it that captures your attention about the story you want to write first? Is it the character? Is it a problem the character trips over? Or is it just an element of a horrific nature that you want to throw somebody into?
It's really, really different. Ironically enough, I'm very much a world watcher. I just see things and I go, "That's weird." And I'll just write things down in a notebook, you know, and sometimes those stories will gestate. Like, for example, for the longest time we were, there's somebody down the road from here who's got this very ornate garden and this pagoda and this, you know, water, you know, this ornate pond with water lilies, and I just kept driving by that thing every day, and I don't know what intrigued me about it, and I'm like, there's something in there, you know, there's, and I ended up being a novella. I have a novella duet called Devourer of Souls, and that ended up being the first novella in that, where there are indeed some strange things living in that pool. Now, in the process, I ended up developing characters where I was asking those questions. But a lot of times, the beginning is a very, another novella I wrote, I would take the back way to school a lot, and I kept passing on this turnoff, this bus, you know, and it wasn't probably, you know, 5 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning. It was probably a bus that was waiting to start its, you know, run. But the lights were all off inside, but the running lights were on and the headlights were on. And it just sat there at that turnoff every single day. And I'm like, there's something not right driving that bus. I know it. You know, but then, you know, I developed a story with that. And that was just kind of like, I ruminated over that. And then I wrote around it. And that's what happens a lot of times. I just see stuff and I'm like, you know, like I don't know. And it just sticks in my brain, and I won't write it right away. A lot of times I'll just, you know, jot it down and like, well, we'll keep that little story nugget for later. So, but yeah, usually it's just seeing something and I'm like, I can't get it out of my head.
And now you have me thinking up a story with a monster and an empty school bus that nobody finds until like a day later. And that's gonna bug me until I take notes on it. So cool. So for October nights, what was the first idea that said, you know, I want to set these stories in a town. I want to set these stories in a particularly spooky time of year in this town. I mean, or was it just you started writing a couple of novellas and then you realized that you had a theme to go in there?
I think it was more the second one. You know, like I said, I love Halloween. I love the air of possibility, and I've already got four or five books in this town, and I just figured, well, if there's any town where things are going to get weird in Halloween, it's going to be this town. And it was just last spring where I was toying with one or two novellas that had been in progress for a real long time. And then I realized, I'm like, we could. And actually, I saw two movies last year during Halloween that really got me thinking about a town where all these strange things happen. The first movie is Trick or Treat. Such a wonderful movie, and everything is so. Now I wasn't able to. My original intention is I wanted October nights to have all this stuff happening on the same night, like Trick or Treat. It became pretty clear in the beginning that was going to be too contrived. It wasn't going to work out too well. So I just settled for strange Halloween town or strange things happening in Clifton Heights. But Trick or Treat was the first one. And then I saw another one that wasn't quite as good as Trick or Treat, but it really wasn't bad, called Tales of Halloween.
Yes.
And that was actually kind of cool because there was a little tongue-in-cheek at the end, like, this town sucks at Halloween, you know? My novella, the collection is all tied together by a wraparound frame story, because I have a character in Clifton Heights where I've only used him in like bits and pieces. I've never written anything about him personally, but I have a character who's an author who lives in Clifton Heights, and somehow he's always coming across these myths, these tales, and turning them into stories. And he's at the library researching because he wants to write a Halloween book. And then a friend of his who runs a bookstore gives him a handwritten journal that's been just mysteriously, you know, donated to the bookstore. And it turns out that these are Halloween stories, and he sits and reads those Halloween stories. And then when he's done, he's confronted with the, were these just stories that somebody wrote, or did this, all this stuff really happen here? And there's a little teaser right at the end of the story that maybe is implying that yes, these things really did happen. You know, like I said, I didn't want to quite make it as overt as it was in Tales of Halloween. I think it was the last story in Tales of Halloween where that deals with the cops, and the cops are like, this town sucks on Halloween. But I wanted to have that, you know, I used to love Halloween. Now I'm not so sure if I love Halloween. So
I also enjoyed Tales of Halloween. I just thought that was such an interesting concept to have. Was it 10 or 11 short films?
Yep.
And then have them all happen on the same one doomed Halloween night. I'm like, okay, that's insanity. That's inspired insanity, and I'm here for it. And most of the little films in that collection are delightful, and they're all such different styles, but the same feeling of, this is crazy. What in the world? I love this. So the fact that you were going for a Tales of Halloween feel.
both that movie and Trick or Treat were the movies that were circling in my head when I began the steps of putting this together. So I didn't quite get that. So eventually I'm going to try that. Eventually I'm going to have to write a Halloween story where I've got these things all happening at once. I don't know if I'll ever, but that's still kind of, because I didn't quite do that in October Nights. It's not obvious that I tried to do that. So that's still going to be out there. It's kind of like, I really want to do that some night where just take this one night where everything in Clifton Heights just goes batch, you know, and have it all somehow tie together.
Nice. So we'll see. And if you do that, there has to be some crossover, like some hapless guy in story number two shows up in story number five, you know, on crutches or something.
That's actually what most of my work is like. None of my books have to be read in any certain order. But if you read Things Slip Through, Devourer of Souls, Through a Mirror Darkly, Things You Need, October Nights, if you read them, you would see that, like, oh, I remember that guy. I remember that place. And you know, that's I love that kind of stuff. So
nice. So for you, what do you enjoy reading to give you comfort and inspiration?
I think I always, you know, I revert a lot to the masters. You know, there are a select few of new voices that I will consistently go back to. But, you know, I find myself rereading Stephen King, rereading Charles Grant, rereading Ramsey Campbell, you know, and T.M. Wright and writers like these, you know, Thomas Tessier. You know, these were... you know, giants in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I think, you know, that's when sometimes I'm in a mood to be like, okay, let's just try this new author. But then sometimes I'm like, you know what, let's just read Needful Things for like the fifth time. Or let's just read Salem's Lot again, you know, because that's just what I'm in the mood for right now. You know, I can tell you I do have a short list of current authors that every time they release something is automatic buy. You know, one of them is Ron Malfi, you know, Ron, and Come With Me, his newest novel, is probably the best book I read this year. So Ron is always an automatic buy. Mary Sangiovanni is always an automatic buy. Norman Prentice, Bob Ford. The fact that I get to call all these people friends, that's even more amazing. but, you know, they're automatic buys, too. So, and obviously I love small town horror. You know, you know, I'm not averse to something a little bit fast and mean and nasty, but, you know, I love that small town, quiet horror, you know, atmospheric stuff. That's what I really like.
Nice. So you have also recently taken up an editorial position with Cemetery Dance. Talk about that and the trouble you are beginning to instigate over there.
So, you know, my relationship started with Cemetery Dance almost about 10 years ago when I had Norman Prentice, who was he had just released Invisible Fences through Cemetery Dance, and he was working with him. And I had him up here to talk to my students, and we got to chatting, and he's like, "You interested in slush reading for Cemetery Dance magazine?" And I'm like, "Yes, that's not even a question." So I slush read for their magazines and for their book line for about a year. And then I was eventually offered the position as review editor, where I was the one that had reviewers underneath me, and I would, you know, coordinate the reviews and get, you know, press releases from, you know, other publishers. And then, you know, I've worked in other capacities for other magazines. I don't know if anyone remembers it at this point, but Shroud Magazine was one of the first magazines I worked for as a contributing editor. You know, I've written stuff for Lamplight Magazine. Mm-hmm. And I always kind of thought in my head I really would like to work for a publisher. I'd have no desire to publish. I don't want to be a publisher. But I'd like to work with a publisher. And then just recently in our conversations, my conversation with Norman has been the paperback and ebook. Well, really the ebook editor, because they've only been publishing paperbacks very sporadically. And he said, "Well," he said, "I'm stepping down because I've got a new teaching job. It's a brand new job, and it's a little time consuming." And I said, "I asked him the particulars, and I said I'd be very interested in that position." And he said, "What you should do when you pitch it is you should pitch starting a trade paperback line too." Because he said, "I think that Cemetery Dance would be uniquely with their existing fan base if they started publishing regular ebooks and paperbacks, like, say, Crystal Lake or Silver Shamrock." You know, Norman said, "I think that'd be a great thing for Cemetery Dance." And that's what I pitched. And they said, yes, we'd love to have you. So I'm not open for submissions until summertime because I teach. So I have my summers off. So that's the perfect time to read over submissions. But what I'm doing now is now working with the books that are currently in the pipe, the books that have already been accepted, you know, and things like that. Like working on Glenn Hirschberg's newest novel and stories, Infinity Dreams, which is an absolutely amazing book. And we've got Michael Aronis's short story collection, Dancing with Tombstones. You know, so my job will be not only to acquire books, but, you know, when the books come through me, to do the light editing, you know, format and things like that. And then also when the book is ready to be released, you know, contacting reviewers, contacting podcasters, marketers, and Cemetery Dance hopes to start with a modest release schedule, you know, because I think my concern is getting the books out on time, you know, and also having known Joe Meinhardt now for almost 10 years, which is kind of, you know, I know how he's gone through periods where he's like, we're putting out too many books. I need to scale back. I'm a little overwhelmed. So I know that I want to be very modest in the beginning of how we release books. I'm excited because it's just the fact that I've been trading emails with Glenn Hirschberg. That's crazy enough, you know, and figuring the other writers are going to be able to. I've always wanted to be involved with, you know, a publishing company, you know, and working for Cemetery Dance. It's a great opportunity. So I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, tell my listeners where they can find you and Cemetery Dance and, well, I guess Crystal Lake Publishing too, online. Mostly Cemetery Dance and you.
Well, yeah. So obviously Cemetery Dance is cemeterydancepublications.com. Or I think it's actually just cemeterydance.com. You can find me on Facebook, Kevin B. Lucia. Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Kevin B. Lucia. I mean, I have a blog, you know, kevinlucia.blogspot.com. I'm not sure how many people use blogs anymore. but yeah, I'm on Facebook and Twitter all the time and very active, you know, posting about horror and the books I like and things like that. And I do, if you do go to my website, I do have a deal if you sign up for my sporadic, semi, whenever I sit down to send it out newsletter, I will give you 3 ebooks for free. So if you wanted to visit my kevinlucia.blogspot.com, sign up for my newsletter, and I'll get you 3 free ebooks.
Nice. We'll have all sorts of links to that. But Kevin, thank you so much for sharing your love of horror today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Once again, the book is October Nights, out October 22nd from Crystal Lake Publishing. And if you guys haven't checked out Crystal Lake's, like, Shallow Waters is the one that I like. So go check them out. We'll have links to everybody. Again, Kevin, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama. From heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all. Take a ride with us at escapepod.org and buckle up because it's story time.
Once again, the collection is October Nights by Kevin Lucia from Crystal Lake Publishing. And if small town horror is your thing, which we've done a lot of the past year, which must be saying something about us as just our expectations of having something going on. Small town, medium-sized town, large city. There's always creatures in the shadows. And in the small towns, I guess there are fewer shadows, so they come out to play more often. Interesting. Either way, go check that story out. You will not be disappointed. But what kind of horror do you like? Let me know. Send me an email, summer@writersafterdark.com. And you can also spring those questions on Twitter @writeafterdark. That's W-R-I-T-E after dark. Or go ahead and leave your questions in the comments for this episode. You can listen to Writers After Dark through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Player FM. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher or on Podchaser, please consider leaving us a review or a rating. All of that feedback helps to raise this podcast's profile and get it in front of more eyes and more ears. And that's always a good thing. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support Writers After Dark and all of the podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your donations through Patreon and Ko-fi and PayPal do really, truly help keep things online here. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi, where you can pick your level of support and be eligible for perks. Every month I pick a winner out of the hat, so to speak, and that person can choose from DVDs, Blu-rays, 4Ks, and books that are around here. I get quite a few physical materials as review materials, and I just don't have the space to keep all of it. So fans and listeners of all of the podcasts, you all get first dibs. So that's my way of showing my gratitude, thanking you for helping to support things around here, because your donations, your pledges really do keep the lights on around here. You can also support through Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/sliceofscifi. I'm trying to make sure that people who donate through Ko-fi can also be tied into the monthly perks program, and I'm still working on that. Let's just say that. But if donating every now and then is more your style, the link you can use is paypal.me/scifisummer. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. See you next time. And remember, keep looking for your own stories.